Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Pregnancy Leave Credit Post-Decision Edition. Thanks for tuning in. On Monday, May 18th, the Supreme Court announced its decision in AT&T v. Halteen. In this case, the Supreme Court considered whether employers violate Title VII by not restoring service credit lost while taking pregnancy leave under lawful Pre-Pregnancy Discrimination Act policies. In a 7-2 decision delivered by Justice Souter, the court held that AT&T's pension benefit calculation rule does not constitute a violation of Title VII, thus reversing the Ninth Circuit decision below. To discuss the decision, we welcome Betsy Dorminey, of counsel with Wimberly Lawson Steckel Schneider & Stein in Atlanta. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Dorminey.
This is Betsy Dorminey of counsel with Wimberly Lawson Steckel Schneider & Stein in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm talking today about AT&T versus Halteen, which the Supreme Court published on May 18, 2009. Noreen Halteen and some other similarly situated women sued AT&T because the company denied them service credit for maternity leaves taken before 1979, which resulted in their receiving lower pension benefits when they retired. In the 1960s and early 1970s, AT&T treated maternity leave as personal leave, for which employees received no service credit. Employees on other types of medical leave did receive service credit, which the company used to calculate pension benefits pursuant to its seniority system. Some viewed the less favorable treatment of maternity leave as sex discrimination, and lawsuits were filed. However, in 1976, in General Electric versus Gilbert, the Supreme Court held that treating maternity leave differently from other types of leave was not sex discrimination, even though it almost exclusively affected women, and companies could do this without violating Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Congress didn't like the Gilbert decision, and in 1978, it amended Title VII by passing the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, or PDA, which made it illegal to treat pregnancy or childbirth any differently from any other type of medical condition. If Ms. Halteen had taken maternity leave after the PDA took effect, AT&T would have had to give her service credit for that time, since it gave service credit for other types of medical leave. Ms. Halteen filed an EEOC charge in California, asserting that the PDA prohibited AT&T from denying her credit as a present effect of past discrimination, even though the denial was perfectly legal at the time she took the leave. The EEOC agreed with Ms. Halteen, and she got a notice of right to sue. She won at the district court, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals affirmed. AT&T petitioned the Supreme Court for review. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case because there was a conflict between the Ninth Circuit's decision and decisions from the Sixth and Seventh Circuits that had addressed the same issue. Justice Souter, writing for a 7-member majority of the court, reversed the Ninth Circuit, concluding that because the pension differences were the result of a bona fide seniority system and did not violate any laws in existence at the time the leaves were taken, the resulting difference in pension benefits did not violate Title VII. Title VII recognizes an exception for bona fide seniority systems. Even if the system produces results that vary along the lines of race or sex or another protected category, it does not violate Title VII so long as it was not the result of intentional discrimination. AT&T's system was consistent with Gilbert because the rule that limited seniority credit for time taken for maternity leave did not unlawfully discriminate on the basis of sex. All this talk about sex notwithstanding, AT&T versus Halteen is really all about retroactivity. Predictability is a cornerstone of the rule of law, and there is a strong presumption that any law will apply only prospectively unless Congress gives a clear indication of contrary intent. In enacting the PDA, Congress had not expressed any intention of making the PDA retroactive. Rather, it had allowed a phase-in period for companies to adjust to the new rules, which Justice Souter found strongly suggested that the law was intended to apply only prospectively. Justice Souter also distinguished the very recent amendments to Title VII that were prompted by the Supreme Court's Ledbetter v. Goodyear decision, which dealt with the present effects of past discrimination in compensation. The difference is that in Ledbetter, the sex-based discrimination in compensation that gave rise to the violation was illegal at the time it was made, whereas under Gilbert, the decision to deny Ms. Hultin service credit for maternity leave was not illegal at the time it was made. Justices Ginsburg and Breyer dissented, saying that they would have found a current violation of Title VII because the company did not erase the effects of its past discrimination after the PDA was enacted. They would have affirmed the Ninth Circuit and expressly overruled Gilbert, which they characterized as a source of mischief. Justice Souter's majority opinion may draw extra attention because he recently announced his intention to retire from the court. Certainly, in this case, he led a center-right majority, applying a long-standing principle of statutory construction, the presumption against retroactivity, to hold that the employer did not violate Title VII because its actions were taken pursuant to a bona fide seniority system and were in compliance with the laws in force when the leaves were taken. Justices Ginsburg and Breyer are further cementing themselves into position on the left wing of the court by their apparent willingness to suppress this legal principle in favor of what, to them, is the greater good of erasing gender bias. Justice Ginsburg won't use the word sex because she says it makes people think of things other than bias and discrimination. It is worth remembering that this case is about Ms. Hultin getting credit for time that she indisputably was not working, because company policy was to treat employees on other types of leave as though they were working. Recent amendments to the Family and Medical Leave Act allow employers to deny certain benefits, like perfect attendance bonuses and holiday pay, to employees who are out on FMLA leave. Some had argued that an employee on FMLA leave had to be treated in every respect as though he or she were on the job. The amended regulations allow an employer to distinguish between those who are really present and those whose presence is a legal fiction. These amendments took effect on January 19, 2009, Inauguration Eve, and it seems likely that the current administration and Justices Ginsburg and Breyer would disapprove and advocate the legal fiction of perfect attendance school of thought. Some would respond that such an approach denies men and women who do not take leave the honest fruits of their toil. Policy disagreements like this fuel confirmation fights. The dissenting justices in this case would surely like some company down at their end of the bench, and it's likely that they will get it. It's a reminder that however much we exalt the rule of law, a lot depends on who's chosen to apply it. Thanks for listening. This is Betsy Dormany, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.